When they came to the place called the skull, they nailed the hands and feet of Creator Sets Free to the cross. They did the same for the two criminals, putting one on each side of him. "Father, forgive them," Creator Sets Free cried out. "They do not know what they are doing." The soldiers divided up his garments and gambled for them by drawing straws. The people watched as the spiritual leaders mocked him. "He set others free," they said. "Why can he not free himself if he is Creator's chosen one?" The soldiers offered Creator Sets Free wine mixed with bitter herbs and mocked him. "If you are the great chief of the tribes," they laughed, "then set yourself free." Above his head, carved above the crossbeam, were these words in three languages: "This is the chief of the tribes of wrestles with Creator." One of the thieves next to him spewed out angry words: "If you are the chosen one, save yourself and us." Then the other thief spoke up and said, "Have you no fear or respect for the Great Spirit? We are guilty and suffering for our own wrongdoings, but this man has done nothing wrong." The man turned to Creator Sets Free and said to him, "Honored one, remember me when you come into the power of your good road." Creator Sets Free looked at the man and said, "Listen closely. Before the sun sets today, you will walk with me in the beautiful garden." The word of the Lord. It's time now for our junior worship. So little kids, head down with Tyler, and he will take you away to your favorite time of the morning. Jesus loves me.
Well, good morning, friends. Man, it is, it's good to be with you today. We were joking just a little bit before you all got here. Just a couple members of the worship team and I were joking just a little bit. Whenever we call for a fellowship day, that translated, that usually means a day when everyone shows up late and hardly anyone arrives, right? Today, just the opposite. You showed up and gathered together and joined in fellowship for that hour before we gathered for worship. And I just want to say, it was great to be with you. Speaking of great to be with our people, we used to have a member here named Bobby Dudley. Many of you remember her. Bobby was here before COVID, and for a variety of personal reasons, isn't able to be with us. But I felt Bobby's presence today. I wonder if you did as well. You remember she used to sit right back here. And we sang that line in one of the songs today, because Satan is vanquished and Jesus is king. And I heard Bobby singing that song with her fist in the air, shouting out, "Satan is vanquished and Jesus is king." And I believed it when she said it. And it was a wonderful moment for me today to feel her presence. So I'm grateful to be with you today. And I'm grateful to be with the people of East County today, here and not here on Zoom and present and elsewhere. So thanks for gathering together in this space. Okay, sermon today. When they came to the place called the skull. As we sat around the campfire at retreat this year, somebody asked, "Why church? Why East County?" And among the many great responses, three in particular stood out to me. One talked about the joy of exploring mystery together. Quite like that. Another talked about the importance of belonging not just to any community, but to a community of diverse beliefs and perspectives. Again, quite like that. And both of those resonated with me deeply. But it was a third response that I'd like to focus on today. A comment one of you made in response to that question, why church and why East County? And so, to help set up that response, I'd like to walk alongside three perspectives today that don't land where Jesus ends up. But to help us see where Jesus ends up, I'd like to highlight them. To highlight the significance of Jesus' rather scandalous alternative to these responses, and to highlight the significance of our campfire chat that evening. So, let me begin with this. When they came to the place called the Skull, the soldiers mocked him. I love my country, and I would do anything for it. I love that by the grace of God, I happen to live at this moment in history, born into this nation, among this people. That is what he must have been thinking. I'm so grateful, in fact, I almost feel sorry for those who have never experienced the peace of Rome. What a time in which to live. Which is not to say I'm unaware of our faults. We are all human after all, finite, infallible. But even so, we continue to improve, advance, perfect ourselves. And only the blindest cynic, the most jaded soul, would fail to see the wonders Rome brings. And perhaps someday, I'll even return home and serve my country from the Senate floor. But in the meantime, I have a duty here at the far edges of empire, because even here, it matters that we do things well. Even here, it matters that we maintain the Pax Romana for the sake of all her citizens. So here at the place called the Skull, I will do what needs doing. And I will do it gladly, for let's be clear, without Rome, this world is nothing but chaos. And if you disagree, consider this. Who built the roads you travel? Do you remember the time when we had to cross these lands on trails that no cart or commerce could traverse? And who guards these roads? Do you remember the time when outlaws would wait around every corner to rob you, or worse? Who made water available in every small village? Whose technology was that? Who increased the riches of the kingdom tenfold over the past 10 years? Who made possible the lifestyle you've come to enjoy? The easy communication you now rely upon. The access to research and medical care, to schools and supermarkets. Who did all that? Rome did. The peace you now enjoy is precisely the peace we provide. And so it matters, even here on the edges of empire, it matters that Rome prevails. And will people get hurt as we police this world? Sure, it can't be helped. But no one person is more important than country. And that is what you failed to see. That is what justifies our actions here today. Perhaps you are a well-meaning soul, but you are not more important than empire. When you challenge our order and subvert our allegiance, you leave us no choice. And so, I'll do my duty. And I'll do it gladly, in allegiance to my flag. When they came to the place called the Skull, the spiritual leaders chided him. I love my faith. And I would do anything for it. I love that by the grace of Yahweh, I happen to live at this moment in history, born into the time of this glorious temple among God's chosen people. That is what he must have been thinking. I'm so grateful, in fact, I almost feel sorry for those who've never experienced such flourishing. What a time in which to live! Which is not to say I'm unaware of our faults. We are all sinners, after all. But even so, we continue to improve and advance and perfect ourselves. Only the densest critic, the most obtuse soul, would deny the goodness of what we are doing. And perhaps someday, I'll even make my home in Jerusalem and serve my faith from the Sanhedrin floor. But in the meantime, I have a duty here at this place called the Skull. Because even here, it matters that we do things well. It matters that we maintain Moses' law for the sake of all the citizens of heaven. So I will do what needs doing and do it gladly. Because let's be clear, without the law and its regulations, tradition and its teachings, our faith is futile. And if you disagree, please consider, have you forgotten the days when Torah was lost and idolatry ruled the world? Have you forgotten the time when God's law was forsaken and the people were sent into exile? Have you forgotten the destruction of the first temple in response to our unfaithfulness? And who was it that revived God's laws? Who returned the faithful to Jerusalem? Who built this extraordinary temple in which you now worship? Who studies Torah day and night to ensure we never lose our way again? We, the spiritual leaders of our people. God's blessings that you now enjoy are the blessings our holy ways provide. And so it matters. Even in Galilee, even among the Samaritans, it matters that we maintain God's law. And will people be excluded on occasion as we seek to maintain the purity of our people? Sure, but no one person is more important than the faith. That is what you failed to see. And that is what justifies our actions here today. Perhaps you are a well-meaning soul, but you are not more important than God's law. If you sully the Sabbath and trample the temple, you leave us no choice. And so, I will do my duty and do it gladly in allegiance to my faith. When they came to the place called the Skull, the criminal derided him. I love my cause, and I would do anything for it. I love that by the charge of the Almighty, I have the chance, even here and now, to make a difference in this world. That is what he must have been thinking. I'm so grateful, in fact, I feel sorry for those who've never known what it is to believe in something so completely. No cost for success is too steep. Which is not to say I'm unaware that some of our ways are unpalatable to our kin. I understand their squeamishness when it comes to doing what must be done. But when we prevail, then they will see. Someday, when we no longer live under the intolerable weights of cruel Rome and arrogant faith, it will all be seen to have been worth it. So in the meantime, I did my duty right here where it mattered most. And make no mistake, it matters that we engage our world. No more sitting on the sidelines waiting. It matters that we challenge the so-called peace of Rome, the so-called purity of the law, for the sake of all those like me who are so regularly oppressed by their despotic ways and their arrogant elitism. So I will do what needs doing and do it gladly. Because let's be clear, without revolution, this life is not worth living. And if you disagree, please consider. When Rome taxes our people beyond bearing, who steals that coin back? When the spiritual leaders shun us from their community for our illnesses or our ethnicity, our beliefs or our lifestyle, who holds those priests accountable for fear of their lives? Who makes the Romans worry about the safety of their precious roads? Who reminds the Sadducees there's a price to pay for complicity with an evil empire? Who does all this for the people? We do. We, the so-called criminals. And though you may question our ways and critique our weapons, do you really think the oppressors would even listen to us otherwise? Whatever freedoms you still have, those are due to us, to the rebels, the outlaws, to the revolution. They may call us criminals if they'd like, but the only hope we have against a rapacious Rome and pompous priests is the sort of hope we provide. And so it matters, despite the people's delicate sensibilities, it matters that the rebellion prevails. Will people get hurt as times as we do what we must? Sure, but no one person is more important than the cause. That is what you failed to see. And that is what justifies our actions every day. So I did my duty and did it gladly, in allegiance to my cause. When they came to the place called the Skull, they nailed his hands and feet to the cross, and he prayed, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." You know, truth be told, I suspect Jesus is sympathetic with those who believe in law and order and pledge allegiance to their country, for they are not entirely wrong. I suspect Jesus is sympathetic with those who love God's law and pledge allegiance to their religion. They are not entirely wrong. And I suspect Jesus is deeply sympathetic with those who seek to subvert the systems that harm and oppress and pledge allegiance to their cause. They are not entirely wrong. Truth be told, I suspect Jesus is sympathetic with each of the three antagonists in today's story. But if so, why then, at this climactic moment, does Jesus not join in with any of them? Catholic theologian James Allison, in his extraordinary book on original sin titled The Joy of Being Wrong, suggests that the first and most fundamental sin of all, the system of sin into which every human is born, is the sin of creating victims. The sin, that is, of believing that our country, our cause, or even our faith commitments legitimates the victimization, which is to say the devaluation of even a single human being. And Allison also suggests that the only way to be freed from that system of sin is to do precisely what Jesus does today, or rather the two things Jesus does. Only here's the problem. They are both entirely scandalous. One, instead of joining in the continual victimizing and scapegoating of fellow human beings, Jesus chooses instead solidarity with the suffering. And two, instead of then turning around and victimizing those who caused the suffering in the first place, Jesus chooses instead to forgive them before they even realize or ask for or see that they are in need of it. Why doesn't Jesus join with those who love their country more than its casualties, who love their religion more than those it excludes, who love their righteous cause, be it social or personal or political or whatever, more than those they justify harming? Because victimizing others, even for the best of reasons, country, faith, or righteous cause, simply continues the cycle of sin. And for Jesus, the only way out of such a sin is found in suffering solidarity and unfathomable forgiveness. When we sat around that campfire at retreat and asked, why church? Why East County? One of you replied, because I want to be part of a people who gather each week and ask ourselves what it might mean to hang on a cross and pray, Father, forgive us. We don't know what we do. It's the sort of question, the sort of community, the sort of commitment that defines not simply what it means to call Christ a king, but defines what it means to follow Christ the king. Suffering solidarity and unfathomable forgiveness. Now I told you, it's scandalous. But the truth be told, I suspect salvation always is scandalous. And I also suspect the world's one hope is that a few of us just might believe that scandal anyway. Amen.